Save faster, borrow smarter, move sooner with CME. Earn 6.5% APY with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus savings account. And when you're ready to buy, enjoy a low 5.1 ARM mortgage rate. Plus, CME pays $750 towards closing costs. Start your path to homeownership today with CME Federal Credit Union. Subject to membership eligibility and approval. APY means annual percentage yield. APR means annual percentage rate. Terms apply. Federally insured by NCUA. Equal housing lender. Visit cmefcu.org for details.
When your furnace or air conditioner quits, you need it fixed. Fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of CARE Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win the Lennox Partner of the Year Award and a BBB Torch Award for Ethics last year. So, call CARE Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.
Welcome back to the Rhodes Pod, What's the Skinny Podcast. And as I promised, here is, I spent some time on Thursday, talking with Delaware Blue Hens head baseball coach Greg Mamula. He is a D9 native, Dubois Beavers class of 1994, went on and played baseball at St. Bonaventure and embarked on a coaching career starting in 2001 at Shippensburg University. And we had all kinds of things to talk about regarding his career and his love of baseball. And I hope you enjoy that. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on the RSS.com network. The Rhodes Pod can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other podcast platforms. Remember, I bought a vowel, so it's R-H-O-A-D-E-S if you're searching the podcast. And it can be found on YouTube as well. Rich Rhodes, all one word, R-I-C-H-R-H-O-A-D-E-S at 4861. So that's the Rhodes Pod on audio only and on YouTube. And I encourage you to do the YouTube, but either way, you're going to get a real treat talking to a really sharp baseball mind in Greg Mamula. And if to make the connection there, Coach Mamula recruited a Dubois Beavers, the quarterback, who is going to play. He's a catcher for the Dubois baseball team. And we didn't talk about him in this podcast because NCAA rules prohibit him to say anything about anything regarding a recruit until after he signs here later this fall. So that's why we don't have anything about Trey Wingard. I might have missed his name earlier. Trey Wingard, a standout quarterback and an outstanding catcher. And he will be a Blue Hen starting next fall. He's a senior this year at Dubois. So we didn't talk about him because we really couldn't talk about it. So I'll just do it because Coach Mamula cannot. So make sure you stick around. There's a lot of memories in this podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Greg Mamula, Dubois native, and like I like to say, D9 native, and you are the head coach of the Delaware Blue Hens. Greg, it's been so long since we've chatted. It's been great following your career from afar, and this was an overdue chat. Good to see you.
You too, Rich. If I'm not mistaken, the last time we crossed paths in person was at that Pirate playoff play-in game, the blackout, the Johnny Cueto game. I think I ran into you in a parking lot there. So I think that was the last time, actually.
I totally forgot about that. Well, I mean, that's a subject in and of itself as far as that night. And I know you're a big-time Pirates fan. And that was quite the evening. Probably my favorite moment ever as far as seeing that stadium is involved. I mean, that had to live with you forever as well, right?
Oh, yeah. I got to tell you, Rich, I have gotten to know Clint Hurdle a little bit since. And I told him I was at that game. And he goes, yeah, you and 2 million other people. Everybody I talked to was at that game. And I was like, no, I was really there, Clint. I promise. So
where'd you say? I was standing room only. Left field corner down behind the left field fence. I wasn't very far from the Russell Martin homer.
How about that?
Yeah. But we could talk baseball and we will talk baseball, but where I wanted to start with is this is September. You're a Division I baseball coach at Delaware. Division I coach looks different than what I've been used to seeing. My son's in Division III at La Roche. You've been in Division II as well. What's a Division I baseball coach doing in September right now?
Yeah, we're just getting ready to start our fall season, you know, with the NCAA rules. So right now we're on the field about 3 days a week with the guys. We're limited to 8 hours a week of coach-player interaction by NCAA rules. And then here in about another week, we'll start our what they call the 20-hour segment, where we can be with the players for 20 hours. And that's when we'll start scrimmaging. So we'll do that basically over seven weekends. You're allowed Division I baseball, 2 outside scrimmages. So we'll do those at the end of our fall, kind of the end of October is when we'll play those 2 games, kind of is a good way to finish up our fall.
How many kids will you have in uniform this fall?
Yeah, we don't over recruit. So we have 37 right now, and all 37 will be on the team in the spring.
Okay. You're coming off a pretty good season. You're in a new conference this year. Is it Conference USA?
Yes. Yep. Just moved into Conference USA as of July 1st.
Oh, okay. So you're going into a new conference this year coming. Oh,
correct.
Okay. So, you know, 3 years at Delaware, and you've had your previous head coach at Westchester, and we'll go get more into that. But this Delaware gig has to be you're enjoying it down there, as I heard from, the podcast I listened to or watched, Patrick Jones Baseball. I'll suggest that and plug that for everybody else. You went into a lot of really good coaching stuff in that case, but I guess, how would you, looking back at the season, how would you assess what you did, and what's the goal? What do you try to get accomplished between now and the first pitch next spring?
Yeah, 3 years in, and feel like the first 2 years, the 23 and 24 seasons, we took 2 pretty significant steps forward with the program relative to where it had been. Last year, more of a step sideways. We fell apart a little bit at the end of the season, so it didn't leave a great taste in our mouth. But like you said, Rich, we move now into Conference USA. There's 29 Division I baseball conferences. Conference USA last year finished as the 5th highest rated conference by RPI. So, okay, you know, if you want to talk Power 5, Conference USA baseball is in the Power 5. And so a really big step up for us. We felt like, you know, making this move, it allowed us to get some really high level transfers in over the summer out of the transfer portal. And we also had a really good crop of freshman pitchers last year that will now be sophomores. So, you know, big step up in competition within our league, but we feel like we're preparing and we're ready, you know, for it. So it's exciting.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of people that remember you growing up, and it's probably no shock that Greg Mamula is a head coach in baseball somewhere, as you're, I believe you're in your mid to upper 40s. I'm guessing at this point, you're a 94 Du Bois grad. You're right where you want to be as far as vocation, right? Was there ever anything else that you thought about doing other than baseball? And we'll get into the background here in a second.
Well, like everyone, I wanted to be a Pittsburgh Pirate, but whenever reality set in, professional baseball wasn't in the cards. It was always going to be coaching. So you're right, Rich. I feel like I'm doing what I'm meant to be doing for sure.
Now, you have a very valuable mentor that's living in your neighborhood nearby, and he was a guy that probably had a lot to do with your baseball success. Your dad, Larry, a Du Bois Sports Hall of Famer. I was making sure I looked that up. He coached 20 years of Beavers from 84 to 03. He obviously coached you. Does he come to all your games? He lives nearby. Give everybody an update on what Senor Mamula is up to.
Yes, Senor, and my mom both doing great. They live in Chicago, and then
he's not near you. I'm sorry. Okay.
Well, no, during our season, they come and spend the year or spend that time with us. So they get an Airbnb in the area, and they're at all of our home games. So, you know, just neat, I guess, full circle moment for me to be able to, you know, coach in front of my dad, who was obviously my coach growing up. So I also have to add in, you know, before I got this job, Rich, I was at Florida Atlantic for 7 years as an assistant in Boca Raton. So they seem to come a lot longer to Boca Raton. They'd arrive in like December and stay till June.
Huh, what a coincidence.
Snowbird. Now that I'm in Delaware and the weather's not a whole lot better than Chicago, it's more of get here in March and leave in June. So
earliest baseball moment, maybe overall, but obviously dad was probably involved with that. Give me something that you can remember as far back as you can get as far as baseball goes.
Oh yeah. It is being a bat boy at Showers Field for the Dubois Rockets, chasing every foul ball. If you remember the old Showers, like Woods, Poison Ivy down the first base side. And I can just remember spending what felt like hours trying to find foul balls, you know, back in those days, like there'd be five balls for the whole game. So you had to go find them. So those are my earliest memories, you know, and just so many good memories at Showers Field. And
do you remember your dad playing?
Oh yeah. I actually got to play with him, believe it or not. He was still playing in his 40s.
Okay.
And I was, you know, probably a sophomore, junior in high school. We played together on the Rockets, which was kind of a neat, you know, neat moment.
That's very cool. And I have to bring in, there was a piece of advice that he gave to a good friend of mine, Dave Osborne, who was assistant at Brookville. And it went something like, coach, how do you do it with 35 kids out there? And your dad basically said they could be in worse places than on a baseball field. So that was a jolting moment for Dave, realizing that this isn't all about wins and losses. It's a lot more than that. And I know that's part of your philosophy as a college coach. Now your dad passed that along to you in some form, right?
Yeah. That resonates with me. You know, I didn't quite understand it at the time, like, you know, especially in high school, like why do we have so many kids in the program? You know, there'd be 100 kids in Dubois between the freshman JV varsity team. And he just did not want to cut kids. And his whole thing was like, you never know the impact you're going to have. This experience is going to have on a kid's life, even if he doesn't play. And he would always say, like, these are the future little league coaches, yeah, you know, in town. So I owe it to them and their kids to teach them the right way to play the game. So I certainly admirable, you know, of my dad for that. And always I felt like put people in front of results. And I try to do the same. I don't think I'm as good at it as he is, but I try to do the same.
Well, a little higher pressure perhaps at the college ranks and doing it for a living. But the one thing I remember about Coach Mamula, Larry, is when I was at the office at the Courier, back in the day, you didn't have Game Changer. You didn't have video score books where, you know, you could really get very impersonal, even though it would save a lot of time for everybody. He would come in with the scorebook. He'd knock on the window at the Courier. He'd come in. We'd go over to the copying machine. We'd look at the scorebook. How'd you do, coach? 4-3. I'd look at the book. He had somebody that kept a good book, so that's always important. And then I would ask him, okay, what happened here? What happened here? What happened here? And then get a quote. I could write it up like I was there. And that was such a neat time to spend with him, talking about the nuts and bolts of an individual game. And you know, I don't know what you took from him other than, you know, the philosophy, but good coaches are going to be able to do that. Obviously you could do the same thing.
Yeah. And I was sitting out in the car while he was there talking to you. I can actually remember that.
Well, you should have come in. If I'd have known that all those years.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Well, I wasn't, because we had talked before we went on air here. I was at the Clearfield Progress when you were going through in high school, Legion, Legion. And then obviously I did cover you from afar when a bunch of you guys from Dubois went to St. Bonaventure. what was it like? I mean, you were part of that move where a bunch of Dubois kids ended up in Bonaventure, and it was some shout outs here. Mike Simmons and Lou Russell beat you there. They graduated. And then it was you in 94 and then Tom Thibodeau and Mikey Gray in 95 and then Dan Dennis and Mike Cedar later. Those guys were fantastic baseball players. And obviously those first two might've started the ball rolling, but you guys obviously did your share of things to help that program being a Dubois grad.
Yeah. And as you say that, it, like, you know, Lou Russell and Mike Simmons, like you mentioned, were there and told the coach at St. Bonaventure, Larry Subrook, hey, there's this kid you should recruit. And he took their word on it. I sent him a VHS tape. He never even saw me play and got recruited off of VHS tape. And then I told him, hey, you got to recruit Mike Ray, Tom Thibodeau, recruited them. And it just, you know, it kept going. And obviously he kept getting us Dubois guys because we were good players for him and, you know, knew how to play and played the game the right way. So, no, just it was a neat, I guess, neat time and neat experience for us guys from Dubois to head up to Olean, New York and be Bonnies.
That was an interesting, and you guys, did very well. And really it just showed you how much talent your dad was able to work with, instruct, teach. You know, he had superstars, but everybody mattered to him back then. Okay. Let's go back to Little League days. We all know the Dubois Little League state title history. Do you have a ring from your Little League system?
No, the group behind me, the Mike Ray, Tom Thibodeau, Chris Smile, all those guys, the year behind me. So I was like a year too old to win. Those guys won, I think, two state championships, I believe, when they were 12. And then again, maybe when they were 15 or 13. But I was a year ahead of them. So, no, I made it to the state tournament once in 13. And that was the extent of it with my crew. But there was a lot of state championships, as you know, through the 80s, you know, Dubois Little League, it was impressive.
How proud are you to be able to look back and see where those facilities are now in Dubois and the reputation Dubois has as being a baseball town? Just unbelievable.
Yeah, no, so much pride, right? Like that was, I tell people all the time, I feel so lucky to have grown up in that generation at that time in Dubois, just so many good baseball players, you know, coming before me, with me, after me. And I feel like that's all we did, Rich. It wasn't just me, you know, like we were playing wiffle ball. I'm sure it's the same thing for you growing up in Brookfield. Wiffle ball, baseball cards, Stratomatic, like it was nonstop baseball, trying to beg one of our parents to take us to Three Rivers to watch the Pirates, you know, and watching the Pirates at night on TV or listening to Lanny Fritteri on KDKA, you know, like that was my life. And I guess probably where, you know, not probably, definitely where my passion for the sport and coaching certainly started.
Give me your Little League team, what the team sponsor was, and as many guys in the starting lineup as you can think of.
On the spot, I wasn't prepped for this one. My Little League team, 11 and 12 years old, service clubs, manager Ray Medrid, Tim and Tom Pitsley were on my team. They're a year younger than me. Bob Spangler, year younger than me. Matt Kreitzer, year younger than me. I think that's all I'm going to come up with. Chris Zaber, who I believe is, or at least was in charge of selling tickets for the New York Mets.
Oh, wow.
You know, believe it or not, those are the guys I remember with service clubs. And the neat thing, Rich, is, you know, I was fortunate to be a decent Division I baseball player. Never one time ever from T-ball on up was I the best player on my team, not even close. You know, like I always, and I, you know, that speaks to what we're talking about, and I'm biased, but how strong the baseball was and still is in Dubois.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Tim and Tom Pitsley. They're the twin brothers of Jim Pitsley. And a lot of people, a lot of observers around this area kind of mark Jim's time with your dad going through at Dubois, obviously a first round draft pick in 92, I believe.
Correct.
The attention he got and what happened in our area, not just Dubois. Dubois had, you know, they obviously spoke well for themselves, as we've talked about. He kind of ushered in maybe some more attention to the area because of the first round draft pick status. And I mean, incredible senior year, incredible talent, all deserved. And it seemed like we got more attention in this area in District 9. Would you agree with that? Because you were kind of, you know, he's a little bit older than you, but you saw the just the fanfare that came through. What's your recollection? And do you agree with kind of that little theory there?
Yeah, I got a couple of stories, if you don't mind.
Yes, absolutely.
This one is really neat to me. So I was working at IMG Academy, Bradenton, Florida, for a year. I was at Cincinnati. We had got fired to stay in baseball. I went to IMG and ended up, you know, being a great move that allowed me to go to Florida Atlantic. But as I'm there, I run into a national scout from the Yankees, an older gentleman. I cannot think of his name right now. And we get to talking and I tell him I'm from Du Bois. And he goes, "You will not believe this story. This is pre-cell phone." He goes, "1992, we, the Yankees, are top guy we wanted was a guy named Derek Jeter from Kalamazoo, Michigan. Our second was Jim Pitsley from Du Bois, Pennsylvania." And he said, "My assignment on draft day in 1992 was I was going to go sit in a parking lot next to a payphone at a Sheetz where they had the number. And if we drafted Pitsley, they were going to call me. I was in Du Bois and I was going to drive right to his house and we were going to sign him right there." He goes, "And of course the call came in that we got our first choice, Derek Jeter." So that's one, you know, I just, you know, when you said that, that popped in my head. The other one, I tell people this all the time, 1992, I was a sophomore. I sat on the bench mostly at Du Bois, but we were state runner up that year and listen to this run of play of opponents. So we had Pitsley, who was obviously first round pick in a big leaguer, as you alluded to, Rich. In the district championship, we beat Dan Petroff. It Punxsutawney, who I believe Dan pitched up to AAA, is now the head coach at Indiana High School, who I believe
had a really good year.
Yeah, they won the PIAA state championship, I believe. First round of the playoffs, we beat Belfont, who had Eric Milton on the mound. Eric pitched in the big leagues for a long time, threw a no-hitter in the big leagues. Eric is now the head coach at Old Mill High School in Maryland, just outside of Annapolis. Or I'm sorry, Severna Park High School, Old Mill of Bureau, Severna Park High School. The next round, we played Butler High School. Their third baseman was Matt Clement. Matt pitched 8-9 years in the big leagues. I've actually got to know him really well. Luckily, he didn't pitch against us that day. He was like the number three pitcher at Butler High School. He said he couldn't throw a strike. And in the state semifinals, we played Upper St. Clair. Their first baseman was the mayor, Sean Casey, who we had no idea at the time, you know, but obviously we all know who he is and hopefully he's the next GM of our Pittsburgh Pirates, but that's for another day.
Nice plug.
And then we lost to Montoursville in the state championship, who didn't have any future big leaguers. But I always tell people that story. I'm like, you know, the talent obviously at that time and just those guys that we ran through in the state tournament in 1992, really impressive. But to finally answer your question, yes, like the Bub Maietta had been drafted a few years
earlier. Maietta's another one.
And when Bub would pitch, there would be 10 to 15 scouts there. And in my memory, like when Jim Pitsley would pitch, especially at the end of the spring, when he was striking everybody out and he's throwing 95 back when nobody even threw 90, you know, there would be what felt like 30 scouts there, sometimes more. And I can remember that game at Showers in the district championship. Dan Petroff, who was a prospect, is pitching and was drafted. And Pitsley's pitching. And there had to have been 50 scouts there. It was like unlike anything I had ever seen. So certainly in the professional baseball world, had a all the scouts knew where Du Bois, Pennsylvania was after 1992, for sure.
And I think that Petroff-Pitsley game took about an hour 20.
Yeah, it was a 1-0 game, I believe. We beat them,
I've got to look that up, and I'm glad you went through the run with us on that, because that's like a 30 for 30 thing that I might have to come up with my own. I mean, you're right. And I think during that run, and I was at the Progress at that time, but clearly following the situation, and I went to the state final actually to watch that game, and Jim pitched. I mean, he was probably out of gas, I think, at that point. He pitched a few innings. Now, Montoursville, ironically, is where a Hall of Famer's from as well. He just wasn't on that team. I'm drawing a blank.
Mike Mussina.
Mike Mussina.
He's the basketball coach, I believe, at Montoursville.
Yes, he is. I believe, and he might not be now, but I know he coached basketball for quite a while. But remarkable when you really outlay that, and just goes back to what Du Bois was able to do during that period. It's just a fantastic year, a bunch of, well, that'd be your best team, right? Your sophomore year would be the best pre-college team you ever played on.
Well, that team was like, I'm going to make this up, but I'm going to say like 14-11.
Oh,
because they couldn't hit. Pitsley didn't shut the other team down. You know, certainly were way better offensive teams that, you know, I think the next 2 years we were like 18-6. So
okay,
definitely the furthest run, you know, but okay, it was,
let's you're just hedging.
This yeah. Jim Pitsley, like, shoot, he struck out against Bald Eagle Area, which isn't even a high school, I don't think anymore. Struck out 16 in five innings because one of the strikeouts got past the catcher. So
yeah,
you know, he was just unhittable.
Yeah, Bald Eagle Area is still a school, and Bald Eagle Nittany is the one that disappeared.
Okay,
they combined with Lock Haven just to make sure our Bald Eagle Area fans.
Central are Mountain, I believe it's called now.
Yeah, Central Mountain. Great stuff, and I'm curious here talking about the difference between the three different divisions. You coached either in two or one your whole career, and you're talking about some big time move to a big conference this year. What's the difference between these levels? What would be some of the characteristics that you see as a coach? First, a D2 player versus a D1 player. Is it just bigger, stronger, faster at the end of the day?
The gap's not as big as you would think in our sport, you know, because kids mature so late as baseball players, right? Like the norm is that baseball players don't really usually peak statistically till age 27, 28. So it's like, there's not as much difference as you would think. I would tell you the two biggest differences this day and age are probably the velocity and the power are the differences. But if we're talking like hit toll, defense, all that stuff, there's not that big of a gap specifically. Like,
want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Pennsylvania, where the PSAC, you know, the Millersville, the East Stroudsburg, the Westchesters, like they have Division I talent up and down their lineups. And just the nature of Pennsylvania and the cost of their schools relative to the other Division I schools, like they get many Division, quote unquote, Division I talent kids. So probably not the answer you're looking for, but that's just, you know, the reality of, you know, the reality of the situation.
Well, and I've always said when I around here, we don't get a lot of D1 athletes going through, and especially other sports. We've had way more Division I baseball players, probably maybe wrestling number two. And then after that, it drops off big time. So baseball really is king when it comes to the District 9 area producing Division I athletes. No question about it. And it's not hard. It's the commitment. They have to be wired differently, right? A Division I player, a Division I athlete is just wired differently, especially if they do finish their career as a D1 athlete, right? I mean, wired differently, commitment level.
Yeah, I would say like the hours that we put in, you know, like as I mentioned, like it's year round for these guys. We have a fall season. We will start our preseason playing inter-squad games in January. The season doesn't get over till June. The guys go play summer baseball. So like the commitment of, you know, pretty much year round and the hours they put in, like it wouldn't be uncommon for our guys to get to the field at 1:30 and not get out of the weight room until 7 o'clock at night, you know? So it's just it's a long time commitment for sure.
What advice would you give a parent of a kid first, maybe that's playing in the little league area at level age, What advice would you give them at that level? And then how would that change as, okay, you know what, my kid has some interest in college. His grades are solid or, you know, or close enough. What should I do to get him out there to get looked at? Because as we know, baseball can be very expensive regarding the perception of, I got to get my kid looked at. Yeah. And you're one of the guys out there looking, but what kind of advice would you give that? Because I've seen it all as well. Maybe not at the high level, but I've seen it a lot of ways of how people try to do that.
Yeah. As a parent of a little leaguer, without question, the most important role you can play as a baseball parent is to get your kid to love the sport, you know? And as we talked about earlier, I think that passion happens when kids are just out in the yard playing, which I know is rare this day and age, but that's where, you know, it's built. But I think anything a parent can do to help the kid just love the sport and enjoy it like we do or did is the best attribute they can do. And then obviously it's the responsibility of the parent and the coaches to make sure that the players are playing the game the right way,
right?
Which, you know, seems to be becoming less and less common, just getting kids to run on and off the field, to show up on time for everything, to be good teammates. You know, all that stuff is, I think, the foundation of what leads to a kid being able to have success long term in the sport. I think we're also in a bad place, Rich, as you say, as kids get older, where you're seeing more and more injuries and kids blowing out at age 14, 15, because everybody is trying to throw harder. So my advice as a parent would be, let the kid mature physically as Mother Nature has intended. You know, we have figured out now, especially in these indoor facilities, how to get kids to throw harder. You know, like there's a recipe now of how to throw plyos and lift and move and do all this stuff. And 14, 15, 16 year old arms, the bone structure, the ligaments just aren't ready for kids to be throwing as hard as they are
right
this day and age. So allow Mother Nature to take its course with those players. And then the last piece of advice is, you know, college baseball, I think, for kids that love to play, is a life-changing experience. You know, just a great life experience that can open up so many doors and friendships. And regardless of the level, is, you know, don't put your kid on stage until he's ready to be seen, and put him on the stage of the people that need to see him. You know, so I say this all the time, like, we have all these prospect camps and 90% of the kids that show up aren't anywhere close to the ability to play at our school. They should be going to a Division II, Division III camp to be seen by those people. So it's always about finding the place where you belong, where you can get on the field, play, because at the end of the day, playing is the fun of the experience, right? So that's, I guess, you know, I could go on and on, but that's in a nutshell, you know, the advice I would give a parent through those ages.
Let's go through a little bit of your career, where you've been. I mean, this is you are well traveled, and that's how it works for baseball lifers. I mean, right? I mean, rarely are you seeing a bunch of assistants being at one place. You might, like you said, at Cincinnati, you had to move on because that's just how the changes. So you started at Shippensburg as an assistant. I guess, how'd you end up at Shippensburg? You were coming out of college with, and what degree did you have after coming out?
Yeah, I was a elementary ed major. Both parents were teachers, so that was what I gravitated towards. And I feel like I could have done that and been very happy being in elementary school. Still love working with children, but elementary education. This is right before email, so I graduated college in '98. Email is just getting started. I was sending out handwritten letters to colleges saying, "Hey, I want to coach. Do you have anything available?" And Shippensburg and coincidentally Westchester were like the two that responded, "Yeah, we have grad assistant positions." So I went and interviewed at both and was offered both and picked Shippensburg, you know, and that got my career started there. I stretched my grad assistantship out over 3 years, and I guess God's plan, I met my wife in year three there. And, you know, that was a good jump start for my for my career. But do you want me to keep going? Or
well, no, I'll go from there. So you ended, then you end up landing at Delaware for the first time and getting obviously your name in there. The networking starts with all this, right? You start meeting people. You get connections that come up later in life or not or whatever, but you end up, am I a recruiting coordinator and pitching coach?
Yeah. So
now you're actually laughing because that was the only place I see you listed as a pitching coach, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you remember watching me. I can't throw a baseball. Like I was stuck at second base. So the irony of that, but no, at Shippensburg, again, I'm a grad assistant, but they would give us in the summer a university car to go recruiting and a gas card. So I would just go work camps and recruit all summer. I'm not in class. There's nothing going on campus. And I build, I think, a little bit of a reputation of this guy will get out and hustle in Delaware. I mean,
you're 23, 24 years old, right?
Yeah, and Delaware so happened to be looking for, you know, the head coach and the assistant were both, you know, older, had families. They didn't want to be spending the whole summer on the road. So here's this young guy that'll go do it. And I guess, you know, that's how I got that job. It paid, I think, $5,000 at Delaware, but it was a Division I coaching job and recruiting coordinator. And it just, the other two guys, neither of them are pitching guys. So they're like, hey, you're the pitching coach, you know? And I always say, like, I feel so bad for those pitchers at Delaware that had I was their pitching coach because I was next to useless as a pitching coach. But
now at that area, I believe a couple of the major leaguers you've been connected with, that's where you kind of cross paths with some guys there, right?
Yeah. The our catcher at Delaware when I got here, John Schneider, is now the manager of the Blue Jays. So that's certainly one connection. And I got to go interview Johnny. Still call him Johnny. A couple summers ago, they were playing Baltimore in Camden Yards, and we took a camera crew down, and I interviewed him in the dugout. We were kind of joking about this whole pitching coach thing because, you know, he's the catcher and future big league manager. Not that we knew it at the time, but he knew way more about like what was going on in pitch calling than I did at that time.
That's great. Yeah. So then off to Westchester, and you had some extremely, you had a really good run there. You got to the World Series in 2009. Now, Westchester always has had a great baseball tradition. What was it like walking into that? Because it was already set up for you. I mean, you know, that was a school where you knew the expectations were high.
Yeah, they had been Westchester to the College World Series the year before I got there. So to your point, like it had already been established. I walked into a really good situation there. And anybody that's been to Westchester, Pennsylvania knows, like, super easy to recruit kids to that college town, you know, just an awesome social scene and just a great place to work and live and go to school. And, you know, was there for 3 years and three of some of my most favorite years coaching. Rich just had an awesome group of kids. And like you said, 2009, we made it back to the World Series and just had a really special group of kids there, including Joey Wendell, who would go on to play in the big leagues for, I believe, 8 years and play in a all-star game with the American League as a Ray. Was our second baseman that year.
And then you end up in Cincinnati. How did you end up there? And you know, that's a cold weather area. So I don't know if Dad showed up much at that venue, but an interesting sports town there as well. I spent a little time there. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, no. So the head coach at IUP, I guess, wanted to get me out of the conference, and Cincinnati had lost an assistant, and he was friends with the head coach at Cincinnati and called him and told him, hey, Westchester's got this young guy that's really good. So that was that connection. It was obviously, you know, the first time I'd ever made, I guess, real money coaching, you know, so that was attractive, and was at Cincinnati for four years and worked under just an awesome head coach there. Brian Cleary had a great experience and loved Cincinnati. Like my son, Rich, I'm sorry to say this, who's now my son's a freshman in college playing baseball at Ursinus College, but he is a Cincinnati Red, Cincinnati Bengal fan. So there's always a dispute when the Bengals and Steelers are playing or Reds and Pirates are playing in our house. But we would go, I can't even tell you how many Reds games. Super easy to get to the park from where we lived and super cheap, at least back then. And we would go watch Punxsutawney native Devin Misurako catch for the Reds a lot of games those summers.
And Devin's coaching as well at Pitt. And and now you said your son is playing at Ursina. So where, give me a little bit of people want to know how your son's doing. I mean, this isn't all about you.
Yeah, he's a freshman, so he's just getting started at Ursina. Also an infielder, second base, third base, pitches.
Better arm?
Pitches a little bit. Much better arm than dad, yeah, for sure.
So you ended up at IMG after your Cincinnati stint, and that I'm sure that led to Florida Atlantic. Again, networking led you to that. I mean, you're building a resume, so it's not like you're a mystery guy out there for people looking for coaches, right? Is that how it works?
Yeah. So at IMG for a year, and actually that year, there was a lot of big leaguers that were coming through at the time right before spring training. So while we're on the Pirates, Andrew McCutchen was there for a couple of weeks that year. So got to be on the field with Cutch for a couple of weeks, which was a, you know, as a Pirate fan, like how cool is that?
Right.
And I always tell this story, not that you asked, but I'll tell it anyhow. Rich is, I throw horrible BP. We've already talked about it.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
About how bad my arm is. So the big leaguers would be hitting on the field. I was not going to throw BP. So I would just go grab the bucket in center field, you know, work the bucket. And Andrew McCutchen would come out and work the bucket with me, believe it or not. Like, that's just, you know, I tell people all the time, like how many, and he had won the MVP like the year before, I believe, or 2 years before. Okay. He's out there working the bucket, you know, working the bucket with me. And of course, his wife is a Dubois girl. So we had that connection to talk about. But the connection, though, with Florida Atlantic was the head coach at Cincinnati, Brian Cleary, was a childhood friend of the head coach, John McCormack, at Florida Atlantic. So when his hitting coach position opened at Florida Atlantic, Brian and John McCormack, again, childhood friends. And that was my connection that led me to the job. And conveniently and coincidentally, I was already down in Florida. You know, we just had a slide across from the West Coast of Florida to the East Coast.
Baseball lifer Greg Mamula, 94 Dubois graduate. He has over 200 career coaching wins. He still doesn't have as many as his dad did at Dubois yet, but I have a feeling your seasons are longer. You have an advantage on them. So, you know, assuming that'll play out the way it is, 263 for him. So he's got you for now. Some odds and ends here, questions that have come up, you know, as I'm listening to you, I think we hit some really good things. How would you sum up? You're a hitting coach. You're a highly regarded hitting coach. How would you sum up shortly as possible your approach as a hitting coach? Because we've seen different approaches come through in baseball. What do you subscribe to? What's your trademark?
Yeah, if you'd ask our hitters at Delaware or the hitters at Florida Atlantic, they would tell you, they call me Coach Mams. What's Coach Mams preach? And they would say walks and home runs. So, you know, that's a, I guess, watered down version of it. But, you know, we try to recruit and develop guys that walk a lot, see a lot of pitches, are really good with the zone. And then we like physical guys that can drive the baseball. Delaware is really flat. There's not hills, you know, different than Clearfield, Jefferson County, not many hills here, so it can get really windy in the spring, and traditionally typically the wind blows out at our park. So it's a really homer-friendly park, certainly in March. Mm-hmm. We get over 100 home runs as a team in 2024, so that's what we recruit and coach to, if I had to put my hitting philosophy in a nutshell.
How would you – give me a quick outline of how you end up getting a kid to your school. So, I mean, you're watching them X amount of time. You have assistants that are helping with that. And then you bring them in. What would be give me a representation of how you land a recruit?
Yeah. Every recruit's different, but kind of the norm is, to your point, we're out and about watching as many high school games in the spring as we can. Now we're in the middle of our season, so it's a lot of 1-2 hours away, but where we're located, there's hundreds of high schools, you know, Southeastern PA, South Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, you know, just a lot of high school games to go watch. So we're watching games all spring. And then the main bulk of our recruiting is going to happen in travel baseball, June and July in the summer. So out and about, seeing as many kids, social media is a big help this day and age, because you find that, you know, your kid will pop up on the Twitter feed throwing 92 miles an hour and you DM him and you go watch him pitch his next outing, you know? So there's, you know, it's, kids are not as hidden as much anymore, obviously, Rich. So out and about seeing kids. And then typically at some point during their junior year, sometimes it's as late as senior year, we're going to have them come visit campus and make them an offer. And, you know, usually within a couple of weeks of that visit offer, you're going to know if they're in or if they're out. And if they're in, there's your guy. If they're out, then you move on to the next guy.
Yeah. We could have a whole podcast on the new era of college sports and NIL and how it's changed the face of baseball. How would you sum that up right now? Because you've been in this long enough to where you've seen it evolve and you've had enough years in Division One or been around it enough to realize how crazy this is getting. I don't know if it's crazier than football, but how would you sum that up for people that know it's not the same as it was?
Yeah, very unstable times. And I think higher education, period, but obviously in college athletics too, right? Like, it's moving so fast and it's not sustainable what's going on right now in college athletics. So I don't know where we're headed, Rich, but it doesn't feel like we're in the right direction. And it feels like we're going the wrong way really, really fast, if I'm being honest. But for me, like, the joy of it all, and for the athletes, like, when you're on the field with them, like, I still just absolutely love that part of it. And the athletes do too. Like, you know, the kids we coach, like, they're just love being around them and coaching them and helping them develop as humans and baseball players. So, like, that's still the fun of it. That hasn't changed. The competitiveness hasn't changed, but all the outside stuff as far as NIL, transfer portal, revenue share, you know, all that stuff, again, is, it doesn't feel good.
Right. Has there been a lot of, since you've been at Delaware, it's only been 3 years, what kind of turnover has been kind of attributed to the transfer portal for your program? And is that as volatile in baseball as it is in other sports, you think?
Yeah, unfortunately, I would tell you, I think all athletes now, I shouldn't say all, most athletes now look at it as a one-year investment, and they're going to, throughout the year, make a decision if they want to return or not. What it's looked like in our program, and I think this is kind of the norm in college baseball, is the guys that aren't playing and don't see themselves playing the next year are going to go somewhere else.
Right.
And I don't label it as good or bad. It's just where we're at, you know? So our season ends and you sit down, and we're always going to be transparent, honest with our kids. And most of them just want to know, am I going to play next year? And if the answer is, I don't think so, they're going to go in the portal and go find somewhere else they can play. And again, I get it. I understand it.
Yeah.
There's typically negative academic consequences with that, losing credits, maybe not being able to get the major at the next university, but that's just where we're at. The part that nobody likes, I don't think at any level, is the kid that's playing and having success and having a good experience that jumps ship. You know, we've had three of those in my 3 years, and that feels like a really low number. So I feel like we're doing a good job
with
you know, guys having a good experience and wanting to stick around even after they have a good year and have the opportunity to go somewhere bigger and better.
It is a tricky landscape. And as you're saying, who knows where it's going to be. And I, you know, we hear anecdotes, and obviously you gave some information. Have you ever been ejected from a baseball game?
So my dad was never thrown out of a baseball game, Rich. So I told everybody that was one of my goals. I'd never been thrown out. And then this past spring, I got thrown out of a baseball game and totally uncalled for, just like yelling at an umpire, walking back to the dugout, and he threw me out. I couldn't believe it. So,
I've been ejected.
It was a goal and I didn't meet it.
Well, it took you to last year. That's pretty good.
Yeah. it was last year's my 25th year coaching college baseball. So I guess that's probably not bad, right?
Was it a ball strike problem that your umpire was having?
It was a check swing.
I honestly think in the major league level, the check swing rule needs to go back to old school.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you watch.
We can review it too, right? Now we have all the technology, overhead cameras. You can just set a marker. If the barrel gets in front of his front hip or whatever, it's a swing. Like, we can define it and we can review it now, I think, you know, quickly.
Well, if you watch if you watch Game 7, and this jumped out at me, Game 7, 1960 World Series, the batter before Hal Smith hit his home run in the bottom of the eighth, or might have been even Hal Smith. I wish I would have done my homework, but I didn't know this was coming up. But he basically corkscrewed in the ground and did everything to hold that swing back. And now it's laughable that was not a strike, that they called that a ball because he didn't break his wrist, quote unquote. And then he hits the home run. So, hey, let's help the hitters out. I'm guessing you're okay with a better check swing rule, right?
I'm a hitting coach. Amen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Greg, this was fantastic. I appreciate it. We talk about all these baseball guys. We've dropped a lot of names in this chat that have really done D9 proud. I don't, if we've missed any, it's not intentional, but during that era, we've hit everybody, Jim Pitsley, Devin Mazarocco, you know, even Adam Fox, the success he had a little bit later in the minors. Brian Stavisky was another guy that was about your age, maybe a little younger.
Port Allegheny, a couple years younger. Yep, I know. I met Brian. I shouldn't say no.
Fantastic career in the minors. It just shows you that to get to the show, this sport is hard, and coaching it isn't any easier. I guess, is there an end game for you? You're going to do this as long as you see fit. How do you look at this sport and what it's meant? And I'll let you round it up with what this sport has meant to your life. It started with your dad passing it down to you, and you have now been a leader of men as well. And you can tell the passion that comes through. And I tell you what, it's impressive. What's your thoughts, you know, of what this game's meant to you?
Yeah. Wow. Great question. I tell kids all the time when I'm talking to them at our camps, find something you love, never work a day in your life. And I feel like I've been able to do that with baseball and with coaching. Like, it never feels like work for me, Rich. So I just feel, you know, fortunate, blessed, lucky, whatever word I want to use to be doing what I'm doing, you know, with having the ability to shape and help, you know, these young men develop that we get to coach for a few years and then move them on. Right. Like, that's really the most important part of my job, as I tell people all the time, is that hopefully, you know, because they played in our program at Delaware, at the end of the day, they're a better father, a better husband, a better son, better friend, better employee, better boss, better leader, better coach, wherever life takes them, is the overall, you know, mission above baseball for all of this. For me, as you say, end game, I can never imagine myself not being on a baseball field. So I may be one of those guys, if they allow me, that keeps coaching until I die on the field or until I'm senile and don't know where I'm at anymore. So I just, you know, I love baseball. It's all I want to do. I have nothing else I want to do. So I guess there is no end, you know, for me besides baseball. But I appreciate, you know, this platform, this opportunity, Rich. So proud to, you know, like I said, of where I've come from, Dubois, and still like constantly checking Dubois football scores, baseball scores, following players from the area. Just a lot of pride, you know, and I guess gratitude for everybody that played an impact and part of my life growing up, you know, whether it's baseball teachers, whoever. Just feel, again, fortunate to be doing what I'm doing and grateful for all those people that I encountered in my life.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.